Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. Stay up to date by following Devin on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or downloading wherever you listen to podcasts. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here's your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast here in the swamp, Washington, D.C., with Mike Kelly, congressman from Pennsylvania. Formerly had a real life, a real job. Mike, you're from northwest Pennsylvania, right above Pittsburgh. Oftentimes, I will have members of Congress on the show. We cover a variety of topics, so I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. But you've been a lot in the news this year. You're one of the guys that really fought and have some real questions about election integrity. As my audience knows, I'm not on YouTube, so I can talk everything I want about election integrity, and there's not a damn thing YouTube can do about it. Because if you're listening to this, you're listening to it on a variety of different podcasts, but if you're watching it, it's on Rumble. So, Mike, first of all, how on earth did you arrive here? What makes a guy – you're a successful business guy north of Pittsburgh there, and you just wake up one day and said, I'm going to run for Congress, because you weren't in the state house or anything.
No, not in the state legislature. But I got to tell you, I think all of us could probably go back to who it was that raised us, our moms, our dads, our grandmas, our grandpas, aunts and uncles, that whole family unit. But I always thought when people ask me, so Kelly, tell me a little bit, where are you from? I say, you know what? I'm from the greatest town. I grew up in the greatest town at the greatest time, raised by the greatest
people. So you're from Central California?
No. I'm not. I'm right above Pittsburgh. But when you look at who it is that raised you and you understand what they went through, and then you look back and say, well, why did they do that? And the answer is, well, they did it for us. They did it for that next generation. And for me, the real call to action – I served on a school board for 4 years, which I really do believe is the most important elected position in any community.
I did too. I did that for 6 years.
We've got to do that, and you've got to look at what textbooks we're teaching out of and what the curriculum is. But in my case, my mother and dad, in 1953, my dad was a parts picker in a Chevrolet warehouse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My mother was a telephone operator. World War II happened. My dad left for the war, came back home, went back to working for Chevrolet on the road, and in 1953 – he put together our first dealership, a little one-car showroom in a town called Verona, right outside of Pittsburgh. And then from there, we moved on. In 1957, we moved to Butler, Pennsylvania, my home. Again, Chevrolet Cadillac dealership. And I bought that dealership from my father in 1997. The wake-up call for me, though, Dev, was when I got a 39-page letter saying that I would no longer have the rights to be a Cadillac dealer. Now, it wasn't because I did anything wrong. It wasn't because I was undercapitalized. It wasn't because I wasn't meeting market demands. It's just under the Obama administration, when General Motors needed money to stay alive, they decided to reconfigure the dealer body. They took from me a franchise, the Cadillac franchise. They had two choices. And then that whole letter, the last paragraph was, you need to willfully terminate your Cadillac franchise, sign this letter, send it back in.
And what year was that?
That was in 1990 – no, it would have been 2009. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a wake-up call, because I couldn't imagine anybody who'd not spent
that
1 minute –
That was the implementation of when they bailed out all the car –
They bailed out General Motors.
And then they forced them to do this. They forced a bunch of dealers to the, – right. They lost their dealerships.
Yeah. And how about this? I'm getting a letter from somebody who's never spent 1 second in my dealership, has 1 penny invested in my dealership, and telling me, you know what, you can no longer be a Cadillac dealer. Now, you could go to arbitration and fight that, but what they were suggesting, they being General Motors, look, just sign the letter, walk away from it. Well, my dad, by that time, my mother had passed away, and I said, you know what, why in the hell would I ever walk away from something that took a family since 1953 to build? I fought it, I won the case. So we got to keep our Cadillac franchise. But at that moment, you start to think about – so Mike Kelly in Little Butler, Pennsylvania, the long arm of the government can reach in and take your business away from you. It's time to go and fight for all of those people to go through that same experience. So that's how I got into this, and I really had never planned on doing it.
And you've been here doing that. The one thing I like about you, I can remember you came in with a big class huge wave that put us into the majority as I recall. And the one thing about you is you no nonsense.
And you get out, and you kind of remind me of a football coach. I don't know. Did you ever coach football?
I did. Well, just – yeah, but little kids. You know, not, because, no big teams.
Because you'll get up, you'll get up there and you'll be like, well, I won't – I try to keep my podcast family friendly. But behind closed doors, Mike will get up there and he'll say, now let's do this and this and this. What the – you know, well, what's wrong with you guys? We got to do this right. I can remember, you know, when I think guys were making bad decisions and you're a business guy – and this was way must have been in 2014 or 15. And you said, "What in the hell are you guys doing? Have you guys ever run a business?" And I really enjoy that. So you're really a guy that can. And but you're a Notre Dame guy, right?
Yes,
Notre Dame. You love Notre Dame. Catholic.
Yes. You know, so all that. So when people say, "So tell me again about why you are the way you are," and I think we're all the sum total of those who influence us through our lives. I will say, if I have one wish right now at this point in my life, I would like to have one day to go back and sit down with the people who were so important to me in my life and gave me so much, just to thank them, for what they did. Because when you're growing up, I mean, you just kind of take for granted this is just the way it works. But we'll talk about influences in my life. So my mother, my dad, my aunts and uncles, my grandmas and grandpas. I remember one time my dad passed at 89 years old. I used to take him one day a week and take him for a ride anywhere he wanted to go. And he always went back to Hastings, Pennsylvania, where he grew up. He's 1 of 9. Mm-hmm. I can remember traveling with him one day. And he was going over what happened to them during the Depression, World War II. And he's smoking his pipe. And I looked at him. I said, "Geez, Dad, it was so hard. How did you ever do it?" He took the pipe out of his mouth. He looked at me. He said, "What the hell are you talking about? We didn't have a choice. We had to do it." He said, "And someday your generation is going to get tested and you better not fail, because all of us decided back then that we wouldn't let the country fail. So it's going to be your turn someday. I don't know when it's coming, but it's going to happen." And so we're there right now. We are facing the greatest crisis I think we've ever seen in our country.
And this is why I wanted to have you on, because you were in the forefront. You're the one guy that stood up in Pennsylvania, and I know you had a lot of people in Pennsylvania supporting you. But you fought after the election. You stood up to all the scrutiny and nonsense of the fake news. You were attacked. You were called all sorts of bad names. But you knew, and look, you're not some political apparatchik. I mean, you're a guy who had a life, children, business. And I mean, you essentially at you know, you could be retired with your grandkids right now if you wanted to, but you said, "No, I'm going to step up and do something." So you're not some guy that's been in politics all the time, but you stood up and said, "This is wrong. What happened in this election is wrong. What happened pre-election is wrong, and the courts need to fight this out." So why don't you walk the listeners through and the audience through, because a lot of people are saying, "Well, you guys aren't doing a damn thing." No, that's not true. There are people that are trying really, really hard to get things done, and you did. I mean, you did all you could do. Yeah. And I know that the ending is not good, but can you walk everybody through, just so this is your chance to air your story about what really happened, and we're not going to filter you at all.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what happened in Pennsylvania, and it wasn't just the case that I had brought forward, because we brought several cases forward, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the story. But when you know what happened on the ground in Pennsylvania in this last election, if you don't say something about it, if you don't stand up, you know the old story, you cannot forfeit the game and then cry because you lost. I think the worst thing at the end of your life is sits back and said, "If I had only stepped up then, would it have made a difference? Should I have stepped up? And God help me, the next time that happens, I am going to step up." But in Pennsylvania, something called Act 77 took place. Act 77 was the way Pennsylvania voters were allowed to vote in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. Now, Pennsylvania can change its voting laws, but Pennsylvania has to do an amendment to its own constitution. Very quickly, for them to amend their constitution, two successive sessions of the amendment being passed through the legislature. After that, it has to be published twice in each of Pennsylvania's 67 counties so the populace can see it. And then at the end of the day, it has to go on the referendum, and the voters of Pennsylvania have to make that decision. Do we want to change our voting laws? In Pennsylvania, they went through the first step, and after that, they stopped, and they just pushed through this no-excuse mail-in ballot. Now, we already had absentee ballot there, but when you look at what happened with the no-excuse mail-in ballot, that opened a Pandora's box that we can't get the lid back on, but we have to be aware of how that worked. Now, our lawsuit really came down to the constitutionality, or rather the unconstitutionality, of what Pennsylvania did. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Supreme Court, a 5-2 D versus R. Said, no, 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 you guys don't have a case and this is crazy.
Those are the Pennsylvania courts. So essentially, yep. I just want to –
No, that's fine.
I just want to clarify just so I, from my understanding and the audience is that they – instead of making a constitutional amendment to
right.
Pennsylvania law, you put in what I would call – and I think a lot of my audience is familiar with this – California voting style where essentially ballots just got mailed everywhere.
Right.
That's your major
that's
point.
Right. That's right.
And then there was no chain of custody on that and the law wasn't enacted like any other law would have to be enacted. I mean that's an issue here. So you take it to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and
they tell us no, you don't really have a case here because the times, places and manners are up to the state except when it interferes with a federal election. And if you violate your own constitution. So I've always thought that oaths mean something. Mm-hmm. Constitution means something. It just can't be something for convenience. When we got turned down there, we said, you know what? We're going to go to the other courts. We're going to go a different way. So we tried to come to the United States, Supreme Court of the United States of America. This is the thing that at the end of the day, I think we are really, really facing a crisis right now. When the highest court in the land, whose only job is to oversee the decisions of the lower courts, mm-hmm. unelected, appointed for life, decides not to hear that. And this is my words, not the words of other people. But the final nail in the coffin when it comes to are our laws alive or dead? Is our Constitution alive or dead? The last nail in that coffin was the Supreme Court of the United States of America refusing right. to at least look at this. And when you had three justices, you have Justice Gorsuch, Justice Alito, and Justice Thomas, we needed one more justice to raise his or her hand to say, let's at least look at what happened, whether it was constitutional or unconstitutional. When the courts walked away from it, the faith and trust and the confidence that the people have to have in our system walked away at the same time. So we got to get people so thin, yeah. You know what? I'm not walking away. I'm not giving up. I am not going to take a day off or a playoff. I've got to defend my rights and what 1.5 million Americans in uniform have died to protect.
And this is the this is really the issue at hand. I think it was Clarence Thomas that wrote that
yes.
that opposition
right.
when they wouldn't hear it. And I agree with this too that the American people, half of America does not believe the election results. And the fake news media, they can criticize you. They can criticize everybody that they want. Now we'll forget that the Democrats have multiple times not confirmed the electors right. and all of that nonsense.
Right.
But you were following the law. You filed lawsuits. You have a real question at hand. And Clarence Thomas, I think, was very clairvoyant. And I won't be as clairvoyant as him, but I'll summarize it. He essentially says, if we don't do this now, then when are we going to do it? Essentially alluding that if a court's not going to hear something that half of America is ticked off about
right.
and they don't believe the results because they – you know, in California, we've been used to this voter fraud issue because, I mean, essentially our elections – are effectively fraudulent because there's no chain of custody. We can have Chinese, Russians, whoever out picking up ballots. Who knows who's paying those people right. to pick up ballots? So we have ballots everywhere, sometimes multiple ballots. They're getting picked up. I mean, it's massive fraud. Not the way that we would even implement elections. I remember when we did the first elections in Iraq, I was serving in Congress. Mm-hmm. Everybody was really happy about that. Remember what they did? You had to vote in person, show ID, and you had to put ink on your fingers because there was only going to be voting that one day. But in California, of course, you can vote for a month. You can even mail it after the date. I mean, it's total chaos. So we're used to it. But Pennsylvania and many states are not used to it. And what Thomas did there, I mean, maybe walk us through then. Thomas makes that decision and what, yeah. what happens after yeah. that.
Well,
or Thomas writes that, yeah. that opinion.
And the key to what he says, and I think this is pretty much embraces what all of us think when we look at this. Mm-hmm. When the justice starts this, when he says, I am baffled by this court's decision. He used the word baffled because I think most of us would sit back and you just clearly identified when half of America is looking at this and scratching his or her head and said, wait a minute. And I go back to that speech in 1938 or 39 by Learned Hand, who many people consider the greatest judge to never sit in the Supreme Court. He makes a speech called I Am an American. And I would just ask our people, look it up. The one piece in there that I saw back in 2008 or 2009, I looked at this and said, this is so clear. He says, when liberty dies in the hearts of men and women, no constitution, no law, no court can save it. And I'm looking at where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, what he saw back then is what's happening today. And when I go back home to Pennsylvania, I have people coming up to me and say, you know what, we really appreciate what you were trying to do and how you were trying to get this cleared up. I'll never vote again. And that's the point I got to say, please don't say that. Don't say that. As long as you understand what took place and as long as you understand that your role is still the same role you had before, now that we're aware of what's going on, what we really have to do is push for voter integrity. We need to make sure that every legal and legitimate vote gets counted. But what we can't do is refuse to vote again, because once we do that, this left has won, and they'll sit back and they'll clap and say, they don't even want to fight for it anymore.
But it's what they want.
Yeah, it is so exactly what they want.
I hear that a lot, and I know the folks that are listening to this podcast right now, you have friends out there. You got to make sure this is – the left wants you to believe that. They want you to be delegitimized. They want you to be depressed, and they want you to say, well, I'm just never going to vote again. And that was one of the things – a lot of criticism of Donald Trump. And the reason the left fears him so much is because he went out to rural parts of America and people who said, well, I'm just not going to vote because it's just not – nothing's going to happen if I vote. He turned those people out in record numbers. I mean, really an incredible feat. So Mike, you were criticized tremendously. How do you – what do you have to say to all the detractors out there that, you know, because I know you try to reason with them, you try to talk to them. I mean, I don't talk to the fake news, but I don't know when you do. I mean, I know they've trashed you a lot, but what do you have to say to all those folks?
Well, you know, look, the real effort is you just don't quit. Mm-hmm. You just don't walk away from it. All of us in all our lives are at one time or another going to be heavily criticized for something. And you can do one of two things. You can either walk away and just kind of be submissive, or you can say, let me just explain this to you. If you really want to hear the facts of the case, I'll be glad to discuss them with you. When people understand what happened in Pennsylvania, they say, I didn't realize that. My understanding was you were trying to disenfranchise 2.5 million people. I said, no, I was trying to prevent the 5.5 million or 6 million from being disenfranchised that voted the right way. You voted according to what the law said you could vote. The trouble is, it was unconstitutional, and too many of those votes are not real votes. They're fraudulent votes. So once you get a chance to talk to people, then they'll say, okay. And then you say, well, I'm going to look it up myself. I want you to. And they said, well, you should have put something out. I said, we did. The papers refused to publish any of the information we put out. The papers wouldn't publish it, which I thought was really, again, so you have this censorship taking place. And so if the idea is, look, you can have anything you want as long as what we're dishing up. You're not allowed to venture off to one side or the other. And I think that's the real battle for us. I mean, for me, it was just what happened in Act 77, and, you know, goes back to having a dealership taken away from me. And then it really gets back to 1.5 million men and women in uniform died to give you this opportunity. Why the hell would you stay on the sidelines?
And
get
in
the game.
I always laugh at all these propagandists, the fake news around here, that, you know, the Pelosi and company and Obama, they're building the narratives, and Biden's like the avatar out there with Harris, and the press just writes. I mean, every single day, it's obvious what's happening here. These are essentially intelligence agencies. When you look at the Washington Post or Times, they're intelligence agencies that are taking propaganda. They're taking narratives and they're pushing out propaganda. It's no different than Pravda from the old Soviet Union. And so it's like the more they criticize, do they not realize that 47% of America is laughing at them. They're not reading it. And the more they do this, the more they're not going to buy it. And I think that's the thing that they don't understand. We just have to figure out a way to get that middle part of America, the people in the middle, to actually understand, you know, look, we did have the people who were out there fighting this on the ground in the states that you had these issues. You had legitimate concerns, and you're right. The Supreme Court, I think it's really unfortunate.
They did a great disservice to the American people and to
the
confidence that we need to have in our system.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thanks a lot for doing this, and I hope you do this again. There's going to be a lot more controversies that are going to come up, but there'll be a lot of topics, I hope, in the future that you'll come back on. But thanks for doing what you did.
Yeah. The only thing I would just encourage everybody, this is the greatest challenge our generation has ever had, and it's been so good for so long. My dad was really correct when he told me, someday you will face the same challenge that your mother and I faced. God help us if you don't stand up and do what's right at that time and you cower and go away from it, because, look, You just can't do that. But the greatest nation the world has ever known is in the greatest peril it's ever faced. And it's not from an outside enemy. It's from an internal rot. We've got to make sure that we stand up and we're heard. And we just don't take a day off, don't take a playoff, and always play it through the whistle.
Just like I told you, folks, these are the types of speeches we hear from Mike Kelly behind the scenes. Yeah. Mike, thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next time.
Stay up to date by following Devin Nunes on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or download wherever you listen to podcasts.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wandering with every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days.
Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.